This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 183. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
020-88-167-691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. It's an unusual situation this week because not only is there going to be a lot of noise in the background, banging and crashing, but Berners and I are in the same room together. Garraz, as normal, you're on the line with us from Millfield.
I am overlooking a dampish cricket ground, and certainly no crashing and banging around, which is good.
It's always crash bang wallop in the MySport HQ, Garraz. You know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. There's big changes afoot. But one of the things I needed to address straight away this week, Berners, face to face, was your performance on the new video for our PV1 product.
Bollywood, here I come.
It was amazing. Have you seen it yet, Garraz?
I haven't. There's a very special viewing going on at my house a bit later. I've got a few people coming round and the red carpet's out. So I haven't had a chance, but it's going to all kick off tonight.
It's professionally done. I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you haven't seen it yet. It's on YouTube. Berners doing an amazing job.
Settle down with a cup of chai and let me entertain you.
Oh, it's
ladies
fabulous.
And gentlemen.
And the bit I would like to point out, which made me laugh out loud, was the moment where the laptop stand is lowered. That's a work of genius.
It's all about the timing. It just kind of filters through. It's all about product placement. That's what it is, Dav.
And for those of you who are just listening to this on a iPod or something, then you're not going to get the benefit of this. But next time you're back at your computer, do have a look at that video. We'll link to it in the show notes and you'll enjoy it very much. But let's talk a little bit about cricket. We've got the Champions League 2020 following on from the World 2020. So it's 2020 craziness at the moment. Garraz, would people be getting a bit 2020 fed up at the moment? The players be getting a little bit jaded? The coaches wondering what to do with another set of drills?
I don't think so. I think if anything, it'll be the thing I'm looking forward to seeing is how the public go with it as well. Because obviously, as you say, it's an overload having two major competitions right next to each other, back to back, and in fact, overlapping in the preliminary stages of the Champions League. So I think the players will be fine. They'll be in good nick going into the tournament. Some would have had a little bit of a break of a week or so. When they play the last game in the World Cup, and I think the standards will be fantastically high. There'll be some guys that are fresher than others, but it's amazing how high level competition does motivate. The challenge for me is how the world view it, and that's been one of the things that's happened in the Champions League so far, is that unless you're in the country that it's in, there hasn't been a massive amount of world interest. So it's going to be interesting to see whether the World Cup actually helps or hinders that.
It must be a nightmare as a coach when you've got players who are coming from one to. I mean, I know it's only 2020, which is not quite the same, but it must be the psychological intensity of a World 2020, and then going into another very intense competition like that. It must be hard because you must see players who, although they're still trying to put in as much as they can, I remember James Anderson in the World Cup, wasn't it? He was trying as hard as he could, but it looked like there wasn't anything left in the tank.
Yeah, and I think over the longer game, that probably makes a bit of a difference. For somebody to recharge their batteries and then fire up for a three-hour game, you can do that. It's the attritional stuff, and Jimmy in that instance had just come off of the back of a 2-year program, culminating in an Ashes win down under.
Yeah.
And that was a big emotional drain on him, I suppose. So I mean, the interesting one will be how Chris Gayle goes, because he's been involved in the competition all the way through to the end. He'd have put a lot of emotional energy into that World Cup, and it will be interesting to see whether he can maintain his high standards going into this tournament. But I think over 20 overs, 3-hour games, a bit of recovery in between, you should be able to get yourself up to optimal levels. And the fact is that, these guys that are coaching in 2020 in this competition are probably used to guys coming in and out from different environments, because that's the nature of the game. You only have to look at you know, the sides like Somerset and Hampshire and Yorkshire who are over there, you know, Yorkshire and Hampshire being our two representatives from the UK, they chopped and changed their overseas players on a regular basis during their campaign to get to this competition. So it's something that, you know, you get used to as a coach. I wouldn't say you'll ever master it, but it's part and parcel of the game, and you will deal with it, and also your players will deal with it.
Berners, have you ever experienced fatigue, cricket fatigue?
Oh, every time. First 10 overs, great, buoyant, full of energy. It's the other 40. I think 2020 is definitely my style because you get halfway and you're like, I could do another 10 here. But yeah, you get that. You get leg weary, I find, if you've batted first or you've had a long innings and then you're trucking from fine leg to mid on. But for these guys, like Gareth said, I mean, they're pretty fit these days and they're travelling, you know, okay, they're going from Sri Lanka to South Africa to India, and they're looked after pretty well. It's all kind of first-class flights, nice hotels, good recovery time. They're working with in a very professional environment where they know what they've got to eat and all of that kind of stuff. I'd imagine it's slightly easier to get out of bed. And, of course, we can't forget that in the Champions League, there's massive financial rewards as well. So I think the motivation's there, even if they were feeling jaded. I think that those kind of financial rewards stand up for themselves naturally, and they'll kind of go again. It's not that hard to pick yourself up and think, well, if we win this, I'm financially kind of sound as well, because I know they're cricketers, but they're all running their own little business enterprise whilst they're going along with it, aren't they?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, you know, that's how they earn their living. So, you know, it's got to be a factor at some point along the line. I think it's a lesson that you can learn at a lower level as well, you know, that it's important to, you know, look after yourself and between games, because you think, oh, it's a gentle game of cricket, but it's not always a gentle game,
no.
Is it? You know?
I'd be more concerned about paying Chris Gayle's excess baggage for his bats that he must take along, because I tell you what, they don't half resemble railway sleepers at times. He must have to pay a fee to be shipping them about the place. He looked like he was wielding a small boy in the final.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll be him that will be footing that bill, to be fair.
No.
Also, I'm not sure.
Or carrying it.
No, correct.
Also, I'm not sure if he's the guy for talking about, giving an example for putting a lot of emotional energy into things. It looks like he could. He never puts it. I mean, I'm sure it's not true, but it looks like he never puts any emotional energy into anything.
Well, he's reluctant to run a two, isn't he? In the 2020 format, he is reluctant because he thinks, I'll nudge a one, and then next time I want to strike, I'll bang it out the park.
Exactly right. And that's something that I think was one of the biggest reasons why they did well in the competition. And I'm not going to say it's the reason why they won it, but the way that they managed their energy, particularly in those oppressive, hot and sticky situations in Colombo, you know, was fantastic. And they only started to really sprint for twos and whatever in the last few overs of every game, and the quality of their ball striking, I think, was impacted upon the fact they were not fatigued and they managed their energy, because that's what wins you games in T20. It's not your singles generally in T20, although those contribute. It's the ability to hit the ball cleanly out of the park, and unless you're on top of your game and managing your body and your energy levels, you're not going to be able to do that on a consistent basis. One of the reasons why Chris Gayle is so good. I slightly disagree on the emotional side of things. I know that he's incredibly passionate about the game and about what he does, and I think that was evident at the end of the game when they won. But he is a one cool customer, and he keeps underneath the surface.
He's got some moves as well.
Yeah.
Well, I was watching Peterson doing it last night on the telly, which was a little bit of a concern to me, because I've seen him dance before, and he got himself under some positions that I was expecting to fall over doing, to be honest.
Pull a hammy if he's not careful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's head over into the yes-no round, which is, of course, every week, just a yes or no answer to three questions that Berners poses to us.
Right.
Okay, so Berners, over to you for the yes-no round.
First question. Marlon Samuels achieved the greatest ever T20 innings in the World T20 final.
Yes.
Yes.
That's an even split, 50-50. Second question. It's easier to exploit batting weaknesses in T20.
Yes.
Yes.
70-30. Third question. Grit is more important than talent.
Yes.
Yes.
Split decision, 50-50.
And that, just to explain that second part that Bernard's read out, that's your contribution as a community to the poll, which you can fill in every week over at pitchvision.com/academy. Okay, it's time now for your questions. We dip into the mailbag. You email in your questions to us every week. We pick out a couple of good ones and we try and answer the questions. The best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can find out more about that if you head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the courses section to find out some of the great names who are offering coaching courses there. But for now, we're going to answer your questions. So, Berners, what's the first one out of the mailbag?
First question comes in from possibly the man with the greatest name ever in the world. It's our friend Bonga Chepkonga. And this week he's got in contact regarding his Karen ball. He's saying it's going well. It's all coming out beautifully, but the problem is it's not spinning. And he's saying he flicks it out the front with his ring finger instead of his middle finger. And he just wants to know how he can spin it more and also land it on the target. So I think anyone that's attempting to do this is doing pretty well. But yeah, getting it in the right place and spinning it is a whole different proposition. So what do you think, guys?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question in that, I should imagine the ball is actually spinning. But it's probably the rotations of it and the direction of those rotations. Because to get the ball to go down the other end, flicking it off of your ring finger, you're not going to be getting the ball. The ball's not going to stay on its axis all the way down. It's going to be spinning in some way, shape, or form. And normally, the Karen ball, if it's bowled by a right-hander, will go from leg to off fractionally, and almost is like a sort of a way swinger, a slower way swinger, which counteracts actually normal off spinner, normal googly, which we've seen in this T20. So, if you're looking to get the ball to go away, the key thing is to get the ball on the inside of your ring finger. So it's flicking across the line of the ball, which will start getting those rotations going. And also the angle probably that the seam is in the hand as well. You want to get that seam running towards first slip a little bit and getting it flicking out on that axis, rather than, it sounds to me, as if you're flicking out on a bit of a topspin axis at the moment, which will probably get the ball to dip nicely. But it won't get that lateral movement that you're looking for as well. An ideal combination of the two would be to have the seam running towards first slip, flicking it off the inside of your ring finger and giving that a go. It's a slightly unconventional way of flicking out the Karen ball off of the ring finger, but with practice and with drills and by flicking balls constantly up against the wall, for example, you'll start to get the feel of that ball coming off the inside of that ring finger. And also, try and monitor the revolutions and what the axis of the ball is doing. Because if you can marry up the axis of the ball spinning in one direction, going towards first slip, then I'm convinced over time you'll get that right. But congratulations for going with a Karen ball anyway. It's a brave move. It's going to take a heck of a lot of practice, as any change does, and good luck with that.
The thing I was going to say about that as well is that although generally speaking with spinners, the more spin the better, and that is a good thing to aim for, but also it's not something that you should necessarily worry about too much while you're learning to get the Karen ball right, purely because it's never going to be a big spinning delivery. So you can use it in other ways. You can use it as the one that goes straight on, you can use it the one that has a bit more unpredictable bounce because of the way the seam lands and things like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a massive ripping ball, because it's never going to be that, just purely from the nature of you can't get that as many revolutions as you can on if it, say, it was coming out of the back of the hand.
Just in terms of target bowling, really, I mean, as a general rule, whether you're bowling a Karen ball or not, I'm always interested in what people look at when they're bowling into targets. And certain people like targets more than others, and there's two ways of looking at a target. You might be one of these guys that wants to really narrow in their focus when they're looking at a target, if you are one of those people that feel more balanced in that position when they're locked into a target, then be really finite, be really definitive with the target that you're looking at. And instead of, say, looking at off stump, if that happens to be your target line, you might want to narrow in onto a part of off stump. If that is the way that you look at Alternatively, he might be somebody who actually is more controlled and more balanced by looking at a general picture rather than a specific target. And the main danger of that is in the game of cricket, whether we're batting or bowling, we get asked to aim specifically at targets, and some people just don't work in that fashion. So have a go at bowling, just looking at the other end and seeing how that goes and the ball just landing and getting that feel right. And then have a go at really narrowing down onto a target and see how that goes. And you'll find that one of them will be your preference. And when you understand that, you can keep working to that and maximise that preference to make yourself more accurate.
Is there any kind of research or anything that's been done into that, Gareth, where people look at where the bowler looks? Because one of the maxims that I hear quite a lot is, you know, if you're playing darts, you look at where on the dartboard you want to hit. So why would it be any different for cricket? That's kind of, you know, the logical argument, if you like. But do you know of any kind of research that's gone into where people actually do look? Because I know it varies for different bowlers, as you said.
Yeah, I do know of that research, but it's pretty high-flung-dung stuff at the moment, and it's only with a few people presently. And it's something that I know that a couple of organisations around the world in various sports have done a heck of a lot of research in using a couple of professors from Europe. And there's some quite exciting stuff that's going to come out about that over the next, say, 5 or 10 years in coaching, and not just cricket, but also other sports as well. But what I can tell you is that certain individuals, and there are ways of testing for it, work better and are more balanced when they've focused on a target. Yet others, say like a Mornay Morkel, for example, is likely to be somebody who runs in and just looks at a general area, maybe will be able to take in information from the batter and then adjust themselves accordingly. However, when somebody of his ilk targets something very finite, will end up being out of balance. So there's quite a lot of research that's gone about that over the course of the last 20 years, and that will start to impact upon on cricket. But without giving too much information away, I would say just have a go at targeting something really in a definitive fashion, and then have a go at having what we call a softer focus and seeing which one works for you.
Is it what Matthew Hoggard used to say, running up and wanging it down?
No.
That's different. I always thought that whenever he said, I'm sure he did say that once though, didn't he?
He did say that.
But it wasn't in reference to where he looked.
No, it was just in reference to him generally. And one of Hoggy's great strengths as a person was sort of dumbing down what he does. Matthew Hoggard, amazingly to some that maybe don't know him, is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met, who knows virtually every fact, and certainly one of the most well-read people that I've ever met. Yet the way that he used to present himself was almost sort of contravene that, really, and was completely against that. But the actual presentation of himself versus the reality were very different.
Oh, well, that's a whole different discussion, so we'll get onto that another time. But for now, Bonus, you've got the next question.
The next question's from Ashish, and he's just asking, what is a good fitness and strength weekly programme a 13-year-old can do at home? He's access to a skipping rope, a treadmill nearby, and also a couple of dumbbells. So quite a basic setup, but some cricket-related physical work is what he's after.
Yeah, I'll have a go at tackling this one first, and it's a massive topic. And when it comes to fitness training, I guess when it comes to anything like this, the question is really answered with the phrase "it depends." There are things, general things, that you can do, but unless you know the full picture, it's hard to give specific advice. A weekly training program for a 13-year-old can cover a lot of bases. Starting with, what are you trying to achieve from that fitness training program? And also, when are you involved in your cricket season? Because an off-season training program would look different from an in-season training program, purely because if you're playing a lot of cricket, you're going to have a different set of aims for if you want to get stronger in the off-season. So it's good that he's got some equipment, because it's very hard to get everything done purely with body weight, but also you don't need to have, you know, the latest and greatest access to the latest and greatest gym equipment to do what you can. You can do a heck of a lot with, as what he's got, a skipping rope, a treadmill, and a couple of dumbbells. So as a general piece of advice, don't push yourself too hard. It's more about learning the techniques of proper fitness training when you're at that age, rather than going for some massive weight, because it's not going to help you at all at any age, but you know, especially when you're a teenager. And the other key piece of advice I would say is that make sure you, whatever you do, it balances out everything. So if you're doing for example, if you're doing a push-up type movement, then that's an upper body pushing movement, so you need to make sure that you're doing upper body pulling type movements as well. If you've got dumbbells, you can do things like rows, for example, of the upper body. And it's the same with the lower body. If you're doing things like squats and lunges for the thighs, you have to do something for the backside as well, to cover the back of the body as well. So you need to make sure that you're doing your hip raises or your Romanian deadlifts, things like that. So balance everything out. And if you do that and you train a couple of times a week and you're doing it for general physical preparation type purposes, then you can't go far wrong. But don't forget to balance things out and get some mobility in there as well.
Yeah, you've got a good kit there to start off with. I'm going to give you a couple of bits of things that you can add to it. One's a broom handle, which will be fantastic when you're doing lunges and squats for keeping your posture in the right position and working through a range. Using that broom handle is a counterbalance, but also to make sure that everything stays in line, because as soon as you start holding that broom handle up above your head and doing a squat, that will help you and tell you where your weight needs to be. So broom handle is fantastic. Get yourself four cones and a couple of tennis balls, and you can do loads of mobility stuff, picking up balls off the cones and then running to the center and then changing direction and sticking the ball on a different cone and doing that sort of thing for mobility. You've got your skipping rope. I'd get onto YouTube, have a look at some skipping routines and just get really good at them, because that's great for hand-eye coordination as well as it is for hand-foot coordination as well, as good as it is for mobility stuff. So have a go at that. There's some great boxing workouts for skipping ropes, which are good for all sports, which are great. And the body weight stuff, I think, is amazing. So not just press-ups and things, but we did one this morning with the first team winter training squad, where the kids would get into a press-up position, and then they'd face each other, and they'd pretend that there was a mirror between them. So wherever the person on the one side moved, so you can move forward, back, you can lift your arm up, lift the leg up, you can scurry across to the right, scurry across to the left. The person on the opposite side looking at that person would have to follow that movement as well, and you can get really competitive, and that's working your core, keeping your positions nice and strong whilst you're taking yourself in and out of balance, which is a fantastic way of going about things. And those two tennis balls, you can do mobility stuff as a pair, where somebody stands with both tennis balls outstretched, drops one of them, and you have to move across and get that ball before it bounces a second time. There are so many things that can be done with tennis balls, cones, the kit you've got on the broomstick. Yeah, so absolutely. Get yourself, and you don't need to get, you know, your dumbbells at the age of 13, I wouldn't go near them until you've got really competent at the things that I've just talked to you about.
The skipping is a great one, because it's a self-limiting exercise, in that if you're running, you can run with quite bad posture and sort of slog around and not get a lot of benefit out of it. Whereas with skipping, if your posture goes, then you have to stop skipping. So it's not only good for conditioning and fast feet, but it's also good for posture work. So I think skipping is a really underrated all-round exercise. And I tell you a good thing, Gareth, that can be done with dumbbells from pretty much any age, as long as it's done in the correct way. Rows aside, because I think if you're doing push-ups, I think you absolutely must be doing some kind of rowing exercise. But a good exercise for general mobility, core stability, and strength is the Turkish get-up. Have you ever come across that one?
No, what's that?
No, go on, talk me through that.
The Turkish get-up is a very, very old exercise, which you can do it with. It's done originally with a kettlebell, but you can just as easily do it with a dumbbell. It's very hard to describe, so I'll put a link to a Turkish get-up in the show notes. But basically, where you start with lying on the ground with a dumbbell, a very light dumbbell, has to be light, because you're never going to do this with a heavy dumbbell unless you're some kind of a beast. A very light dumbbell, held in, you know, the bench press type position, held it up in the air, and you're lying on your back. That's where you start. You imagine the bench press position, but just with one dumbbell, and you end up standing up. You're fully standing up with a dumbbell held above your head in a shoulder press position, and it's how you get from the lying down to the standing up. Involves pretty much every joint in the body, and excellent for core stability and being aware of your body position through each of these. I think it's nine different positions, seven or nine, I can't remember exactly, but it's several different positions.
So you
on the way
hands
through,
and you do a number of different
and then you would do say just three on each side, because it's such a complete body exercise. So Gareth,
sounds awesome.
See what you think about it. It's a really good full body exercise that covers mobility and stability, which is very
rare. I'll stick to a Turkish bath.
Turkish delight.
I mean, the interesting one on that, David, is that movement sounds. I mean, I'm only going on what you're telling me here, but that movement sounds fantastic. It sounds very functional and dynamic as well. So, you know, we're talking about a 13-year-old here, and obviously we don't know the physical stature of that 13-year-old. So the dumbbell, as you say, has to be really light. But initially, whilst you're getting used to that quite complex technique, it might be worthwhile, you know, a can of beans being something that you can start with, just to get that right before you then introduce a dumbbell. And we do a lot of work with the younger ages with cans of beans, just to get that resistance, that little bit of resistance in, particularly when you're working with a smaller muscle group or working with a new technique like that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a dumbbell. And going back to, you know, we get people from all over the world, don't we, that don't necessarily have a gym or equipment near them, you know, within 100 kilometres or so. You know, a can of beans is really good, particularly when you're doing those complex movements, which it sounds like this exercise is.
Yeah, it is a complex movement, and often when it's coached, they will start by literally getting you to take your shoes off, and then put one of your shoes on the palm of your hand, and do it with your shoe on the palm of your hand. And the only thing you have to do is make sure the shoe doesn't fall off your hand. It's not about the weight; it's about the technique. You know, it's like a bowling action. You know, you have to get the technique right before you can really get the most out of it. So, yeah, don't grab the heaviest dumbbell you can and try and do it. You're going to end up in trouble. But that's the same with any exercise, really. You know, if you start light, get the technique right, and then very gradually improve as you go. And if there's any fallback in technique, stop at where you are until you can get to a point where you can do it with perfect technique every time. And Berners is doing it now.
Are you allowed to put your hands on the floor?
Do you want me to? I can demonstrate it, but it's not going to be very good for the podcast.
Yeah, come on, let's do it.
It's not great radio, lads.
I'll do it after. Okay, all right. Okay, so Ashish, thank you very much for sending in your question. Hope that gives you some guidelines. Time now for the soapbox, and this week it's Berners climbing onto the soapbox for his 1 minute uninterrupted and 1 minute only. Berners, don't go over this week.
Usual ramblings. This time it's precious situations and decision making. The number of times you see key plays in a game, or real kind of, you know, contested areas where people don't quite bottle it or don't quite collect their thoughts. There was a classic the other day with Southie bowling a no ball, first ball of a power over, and then goes on to bowl wide and just loses control, where he probably should have just tried to just settle in, done the basics right first, not trying to swing the ball or bowl too quick, and created a few problems for the batsman. Also when fielding, similar kind of circumstances, you know, in those key times you've got to really concentrate, really back yourself, and you often see the guys not backing up, dropping catches. So just really collecting your thoughts and really thinking about what you're doing, winding it back to the basics and not giving it away, making the other team or the opponent actually still having to do something, rather than just literally just running up and trying to do something out of the box. Sticking to your guns, being positive, and getting your core skills delivered at the right time.
Okay, so that's the end of the show for this week. We're just going to finish off with our competition winner. Of course, every week there is a prize given to the best question, which is an online coaching course. Go to see a Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, we had Bonga's question about the Karen ball. He was back. Bonga, our favourite named person. And Ashish's questions about strength training for a 13-year-old. So which one did you prefer?
I prefer Bonga's one, and actually I ended up watching the World Cup final in a different way because of his question. I knew it was coming up, so I watched for all of the different variations so I could hopefully give a half-decent answer. So Bonga, you stretched me, mate, so that's the reason why you're winning this week.
Congratulations, Bonga. So there you go. It's worth emailing a question in again, even if you don't win a prize the first time around, and Bonga wins an online coaching course. The Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with us, have their question answered, and have a chance of winning an online coaching course themselves, what will they have to do?
They can give us a quick call. The number is 02088 167 691, or drop us an email, and the address is coach@pitchvision.com.
It is. Our Twitter, where you can get 140 character question into us, is PV Cricket Coach. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can head over to iTunes, type in Pitch Vision Academy, and you'll find us there. Just click on subscribe, leave a review if you like. And if you don't use iTunes, head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top, and all the instructions for how to subscribe in any device that you want, your BlackBerry, your Android, whatever you weird and wonderful piece of equipment you've got. I think there's even an internet toaster available these days. One more thing before we leave is, of course, the tail ender, which we have every week. And I'm joined on the line now by Nicol, who is our correspondent in India, because we're always looking for new terms to come up with. And I think India has a rich vein of cricketing terms that we don't use in other parts of the world. So welcome back to the show, Nicol.
Hey, David. It feels really great to be back, as usual.
So you've got your tail ender term for this week. What is it?
Yeah, it's a Hindi word, actually. Mm-hmm. It's the word is katiya. It means edges. If a batsman plays, you know, he just edges the ball and score runs by that. The edge here, when the ball comes, he edges it and it runs for four, or he takes singles or doubles, and you know, he plays the whole game like that. We call him that you have played on katiya. In Hindi, it is katiyo pe khel ke aaya. So that's the tail ender this week. It has happened with a teammate of mine who scored 42 runs by just edging the ball.
Oh well, you see, that's is it a term which is means you're being lucky, or does it mean you're being a bit streaky and you're riding your luck rather than a good thing? It's a bit of a something that you'd say to a batsman if you wanted to put him off a bit.
Here it is something we take in as in a negative way.
Negative,
you
yeah.
get me? Yeah, because we say you have no skill, you have just played by your luck. You have no skill, you can't do anything. If the captain would have been a bit clever, he would have placed fielder and you have been gone first ball on duck.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes being lucky is a skill in itself. But thanks for coming on the show, Nicol, to give us that term, and we look forward to getting some more in future.
Yeah, cheers, buddy.
So that's all for this week. Until next time, cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.